Good evening. This is the NLA Hamsnet. This is Terry from Colorado. My call sign is KI0RE. You can look it up on the net. And this is the net that we have every Wednesday night that is conducted at this time about 8 p.m. Eastern time for about 45 minutes. And me and my boys aren't doing well today. We talk about things Hamish and NLA-ish, and anybody that wants to chime in is welcome to do so, and I'll just get with it and get going here. Do we have any questions from one of the other times, or comments, or suggestions? Hearing none, just jump in if you want to say something. I'd be happy to stop and let you say it. We are going through the Ham Radio License Manual, 3rd edition, Level 1 Technician, that the ARRL puts out. We are on page 19 in the back. I forget what the name of this thing was, Choosing a Ham Radio. And we're on the lower section of page 19, Digital Signal Processing. Many new radios employ Digital Signal Processing, or DSP. To perform many functions in software that were previously performed by electronic circuits. In the olden days, back when I got my first radio back in 97, you still had electronic modules that you plug in and it would take over a particular circuit, and it had electrical components, discrete components that would do the job of a filter or whatever you were buying the add-on for. And it was expensive because you're paying for the discrete components. Well, now they do it in software. And a lot of radios have a little computer chip that isn't exactly like your big chip in your desktop or your laptop computer, but it's got enough knowledge to where it can do certain things. And so they do in software what used to happen in hardware and real discrete electrical circuits. And when you think of a software-defined radio, an SDR, same thing. They're doing in software what you could do before with discrete components. We're losing an art there, and I hope somebody chooses to learn some ham radio and go along and get with it and actually do it. It's a wonderful hobby. Special microprocessors do the job inside the radio. The latest generation of radios using DSP has very good performance. It was a little flaky at first, I have to admit. DSP filtering was discussed in the preceding section, and we talked a little bit about that, filters and receiver performance on page 18. DSP is also employed to get rid of unwanted signals. So you can do noise reduction, which is used to reduce the hissing and crackling of static. And on HF, you always have hissing and crackling of static and other random noise present in the audio of received SSB and CW signals. Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. I skipped the line. And other, no, that's right. So noise reduction is to get rid of the hissing and crackling of static and random noise in audio SSB single sideband or CW Morse code type signals in this way. This function is usually available with several levels of processing, with more aggressive levels also giving the signals a digital sound. And what that means is that they kind of shape things a little bit. So it allows the computer to drop the noise level to get noise reduction, but it also changes the actual signal that you want to hear, somebody's voice or their computer signal, to have a little bit more of a different sound to it. It doesn't have all of the acoustical type harmonics that you normally get from a normal mic. Some people think it's harder to listen to. Some people think the old-style analog signal is harder to listen to, and they like the DSP. It all depends on you. So make sure you use that radio a little bit. Lots of times in a radio shop, they'll have them set up and you can try them out before you actually buy one. I recommend you do that and you see what it sounds like, because some of them sound great and some of them don't. Noise blanking, NB, so noise reduction is NR as an abbreviation. But noise blanking, NB, is used to remove repetitive noise pulses, such as those from an automobile's ignition system or power line noise from nearby AC utilities. Noise blanking is very useful in mobile HF radios, and noise reduction can be used for all single sideband and CW HF operations. So things like spark plugs firing, anything repetitive, it says, oh, I've seen that before. That's not part of the signal I'm trying to listen to, and it reduces it. It's looking for stuff that's way down on the lower end of the band. The actual signal in there is a higher frequency, possibly, but it occurs at a regular interval that's much slower than actual signal that you're trying to listen to in HF or VHF or UHF, etc. DSP can also be used to create a notch filter. Not only can the filter's notch frequency for be manually adjusted, just like an electronic notch filter, but many DSP notch filters can automatically detect the frequency of the interfering tone and tune the notch filter itself. Automatic notch filtering, ANF. So if you see ANF, that's what it's for. That's pretty cool. And they talk about the sensitivity created by filters and bandwidth suited to the signals mode on page 19, figure 9. I think we went over that last time. Radios with more DSP functions also allow you to control the filter response, how aggressively nearby signals are rejected. A filter that allows some of those signals to be heard as a soft response, while one that rejects the signals more completely is a sharp or steep response. And that's talking about the sides of the filter. When you put it on an oscilloscope, it is either a very steep climb and everything above this frequency is going to be cut out, or you put on a spectrum analyzer, excuse me. Or it's a very slow, low slope, which means it's soft. You can hear some things a little bit through it because it's not amplifying them as much or not killing them as much. Anyway, when you think about it, an SDR and DSP are exactly the same thing, only in most radios they give you a DSP exclusively for knocking down the noise and making it easier to hear your real signal. In a software-defined radio, you can have all of that, plus it actually decodes your primary signal. I think I told the story about the guy who gave a talk here at CU. He listened to some of the signals that were transmitted off the engines and off the satellites and around the different aviation places, and he would listen for any kind of signal. He went looking for them, and he found so many that he went through them one at a time, figured out what type of modulation they were using, and eventually got to where he could just lay everything out. It would run it right into a database. And, he showed us one day at LAX and all the signals that were coming there, and it was unbelievable. Memories. HF transceivers use memories and VFOs in much the same way as VHF UHF models did. They start by reading the VHF UHF section on memories. You can start there. HF radios often offer band memories as well, sometimes referred to as band stacking registers. These memories store one to several settings of the VFO on each of the HF bands. Pressing a band select key on the front panel and it goes right to it. So these are all things that you should look at that might go and figure into your journey on figuring out what kind of radios you should buy. And you should try them out. See what you like and what you don't like and what you need and what you really don't need. HF transceivers use memories and VFOs in much the same way. Scratchpad memory is a set of temporary memories that you can put anything in there. Use when you're just tuning around the band. And I use this lots of times. I'll just use one of those to put whatever I'm talking on that maybe I set up because I want to jump over and tell this person I'm on this frequency, blah, 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 blah. I found this radio or this repeater, and then I jump back over to it. Find out how many memories you'll want on your HF radio. Count all the NETs and emergency frequencies you might use. Some of the frequencies for WWV, WWVH, and you can go to www.nist.gov, and that's right over here in Boulder. The U.S. time and frequency standard stations, calling frequencies for your most used modes, propagation beacons. Now, propagation beacons are nice because they're just always on, and you can lock on to them, or you not lock on, but you can dial up their frequency and see how the hearing is, how the listening is for that direction. Lots of times you'll get an idea that, well, all the ones on the West Coast are not coming in at all, but, boy, the North and South ones are just booming. So I'm going to try and work North and South tonight. Scanning is also provided in mid and top scale HF radios, just as in VHF, UHF radios, which it's on almost every one now. For discussion on terms, you can go back and look at that. The most popular scanning mode on HF is range scanning, in which the radio tunes continuously across a portion of the band, looking for any signal inside that range of frequencies. Scanning is less useful on HF. However, because of the higher noise level and the wider range of usable signals, making it difficult to set a single level to use as a scanning threshold. So I tend to agree with that. Unless you've got a real good DSP and you're knocking a lot of stuff down, maybe you can get it to work. Antennas. If antennas are the most important part of an amateur station, that is doubly true on HF, where long-distance contacts place a premium on the antenna's ability. I have to tell you, a guy got a new antenna, and he had it on his car, and he would do code as he was driving around. I don't recommend it. Please don't try it. But he had lots of time, let's just say at night, when he was guarding stuff, and he would do that. Well, he could look around, and he could just do this with a little key, a little bug on his fingers. But he got an antenna that was about 12 feet high and put it on his little car, and it had some stuff on top. And he started making contacts and exchanging QSL cards. And everybody should know what a QSL card is by now. And he went to the post office, and he had one. And he went on to get his lunch. And as he was eating lunch, came back out, and there was a guy standing by the back of his car looking up at his antenna. He said, well, that's a pretty big antenna. He said, yeah, so I bet you can talk to China on that. So he whipped out the QSL card and showed him that, yes, he had talked to China, to this person, this day, this frequency. The stories. The simplest antenna and very effective one is a half-wave dipole. And so you want to look at gain, and you want to look at how big this thing is. You want an antenna that has the right capacity and the right inductance so that it makes it look like a bigger antenna, or it's got a gain of 6 dBs or 12 dBs. That's ideal if you can get it. The next thing is the height. It takes a while. It takes some space to put an HF antenna on your car. You're going for a half-wave dipole, but you can't always get it because some of those frequencies down the HF, the wavelength is a kilometer long. Well, a half-wave dipole is half a kilometer. You can't put that on the car, but there's some things you can do to make it smaller. You can build it yourself, look around, talk to other hams, all the more reason to make a contact with your local ham community and pick up an Elmer and start talking to him because he'll have some recommendations. Vertical antennas are also popular, particularly where a horizontal antenna may be difficult to put up for portable use, and where low-profile antenna may be more suitable. I got another one. If you're going to do some locating, fox hunting, or balloon tracking or something like that, really helps to have a rotatable horizontal antenna to help you zoom in on the beacon and kind of point. The beacon is over that way. Oh, the beacon just went behind us, so it's that way. So let's turn down here, whatever. And I've seen some good setups that have a post, and you can work it from inside, and you can turn it all the way around within reason. You know, after about the third turn, your coax is starting to loop on you and you get all messed up, and you want to avoid that. But for the most part, you have vertical antennas because if you think about the radiation from an antenna goes out the sides of the antenna. And so that means it's propagating out along the ground. Good deal. Horizontal antenna is great if you want to cut out a lot of that, but you want to bring the direction down to it perfectly. It's in that direction right there. Mobile antennas, let's see, a tunable whip. Oh, it has a picture there of a High Sierra HS1800. It's a so-called screwdriver-style HF mobile antenna that provides continuous coverage for all HF bands. So you can pick whatever band, you can pick whatever band you want and use it, and you can just hit a button, and the radio and the antenna talk to each other and tune themselves to that frequency. Oh, how nice it can be. And there's a picture of one on page 21 there out of the ARRL manual. You can see what it looks like. So be aware of that. If somebody is selling an HF rig but no antenna, you're going to have to get the antenna for it. If somebody's selling a particular antenna, but it only works with a Yaesu ST817, you kind of need to either have that radio or be looking for that radio. Let the buyer beware. Make sure you know what you're doing. Do your homework. Okay, I got that. We've got 2.5 pages, and we're going to try and get finished tonight. Unless anybody's got some input. Let's see. There's some that don't have as good an input. Where can you place an antenna? You know, you can put it on the bumper. You can put it on one of the trunk lid or something like that. HF is not so bad. VHF and UHF, you kind of got to worry about. You want it on top of the roof of the car if you can, so that the passenger compartment, the signals aren't going that down in there. But if you think about it, if you got one on the bumper, like an HF antenna, well, you key up and you're hitting people inside the car because it's coming through the windows. It's not so bad on an HF because you have such a long wavelength, but it's still there because you're so close to the antenna. You're only 5-6 feet away from the antenna. So make sure you do your homework and do the safety stuff that we talked about. The most popular feed line. Now that you got an antenna, you got a radio, you got to have a feed line that connects the two. The most popular antenna feed line is coaxial cable or coax. There are many types, but the most common are, from smallest to largest, RG58, RG8X, RG8, or RG213. Use RG58 only for short, 50 feet or less. That's the only thing we use inside of a car for a very long time. RG8 is the size of your little finger, and so it's hard to find a path all the way through the car, but RG58 is more like the antenna wire that you might use. It's even smaller than some of the antenna wires you might use from a cable network or a regular antenna. Let's see. RG8X will carry full power. You just kind of want to investigate that. Again, talk to your mentors and get the right poop. Do your due diligence, if you will. Cable is available with connectors pre-installed, or with a little Elmering, you can learn how to install them yourself. And I highly encourage you to do that. It gives you a lot more confidence about what you can and can't do. The untouched feed line is open wire, ladder line, or window line, consisting of two parallel wires coated with a plastic insulation. Open wire has a very low loss, but is not as convenient to use. But I've seen people, they don't do it much anymore because the TSA frowns on people with large pieces of wire that they can undo. But I've heard of people going to a particular hotel, hanging a random wire out the window and talking on HF with it when they're, and that uses up their time, their spare time there while they're there. Accessories and special features, and I'm going a little fast, so please stop me if anybody has any questions. I'd be happy to answer questions. Antenna tuners are known by several names, impedance matching unit, tuning unit, matchbox, transmatch, etc. They do not actually tune the antenna, but convert whatever impedance is present by the antenna system at the output to the feed line into a 50-ohm load so that your transmitter will deliver maximum power output. Some radios have an automatic tuner and antenna tuner, ATU, built in. But if yours doesn't and your antenna's SWR is much higher than 2.1 on the frequency you wish to use, then you'll need an external antenna tuner, either automatic or manual adjusted. A model rated at 300 watts will accommodate the output of a 100-watt transceiver with room to spare. Manual antenna tuners often include an SWR meter, directional watt meter, but these can also be purchased as individual items. Lots to think about. If you're not getting better than 2 to 1, sometimes it'll work with 3 to 1, but you're losing so much. And Jan, you can help me here because I forget how much a 2 to 1 will drop a signal, but it's like 3 or 6 dBs. It's a lot. Okay, so get one with an SWR meter. It sure helps to tune it real quick. Antenna switches allow you to select different antennas, so that's another way to handle it. You have one great big antenna, and it'll handle, let's just say it'll handle 160 and 80 meters just for jollies. And then you have another antenna that you have mounted on the car, and it'll handle maybe 40 meters and 20 meters. And then you have even still another one that handles VHF and UHF. And you maybe plug it in, I don't know, you know, your radio might or might not, and you have a switch, and you just turn the switch, select which antenna you're doing. And it explains how those work. All manufacturers offer separate speakers for the radios. I can't emphasize this enough. The reason is that there's so many dual bands out there that you have one speaker that's usually inside of the unit, and then you have another one that goes that you can hook, and one speaker will come on when you're talking on one of your A band or your B band, and depending on how you tune, you can tell which band they're on without looking down and having to read the radio face. And they got a separate front panel there at the top of page 23, kind of show you what some of that looks like, and that looks very much like a radio that I have. And you can see that face, but it makes it easier to handle the radio and not get distracted from doing the real work that you're doing is driving the car. So you want to get used to the radio sitting around in it before you start driving, so that you know what you got to do, and see if you can't. Imagine you're driving, look down the road, and see if you can say, oh, well, that just came out of UHF. That's on my left channel, so I'll make sure I'm on my left channel, glance down, look back up the road. You got to be very good at it and very quick, and they also have boom mics and voice-operated stuff. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good. Again, you need to fit it to how you live your life and how you're using your radio, and look around to see. what other people are doing. What if you want to make digital mode contacts using PC or just control rig from the PC keyboard? Well, you can do that. The Versus control port on PC can read, change, and operate many things. Look for a radio that has a USB interface or some type of COM interface. Maybe it operates off of, they don't do it very much, but the little 9-pin D connector. Now everything is almost always USB, but they also do different things now. So I'm behind the power curve on that one. I haven't done it a whole lot. But if you're using a software-defined radio, you want a pair of headphones so that you can listen real intently and the environmental noise doesn't get to you. And then there's keyers. Okay, we're not going to worry about that. Last page, 24. It shows figure 12. With the right hardware and software, you can use your computer to control your transceiver and even make contacts using a variety of digital modes. That's a lot of fun using digital modes. But yeah, I don't know if you've ever used a chat versus talking on the telephone. You can do it on the telephone. Well, you can do it in the chat in a minute. What you can do on the telephone in about 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Very, very much slower chat. But some people like to do it. That's fine. Go ahead. It shows a little, figure 12 shows our transceiver, and it's controlled by a USB or COM port to the computer. And you got a TNC that does the translation of your audio and turns it into something that you're typing on a computer. I've done stuff like this before. It's got a little picture of how to hook it up. You know, our RTDY, which is teletype and radio teletype, or PACTOR, or many other types. They've got a whole range of modulations nowadays. And then you can use it for WinLink and EchoLink, which is using the Internet and packetizing your voice and your audio from your radio over the Internet to a remote computer, which then turns it into a radio, an actual analog signal, which gets put into a radio that allows you to either talk on the repeater or talk on a radio that is set up. And that's kind of fun. People like to do that. They like to dial up Australia at the right time of day and talk to people in Australia. And there's a guy here that in Boulder County that likes to turn the bark repeater onto Australia, and he talks to a guy who's traveling to work every day about the same time. So if you're on at that time, you can listen to the discussion with the guy in Australia. And then it has a manufacturer's directory. I'm not going to go over that, but I will tell you the names. There's Elenco, Electraft, Flex Radio Systems, ICOM, Kenwood, MFJ Enterprises, Tentec, and Yaesu. And I'd say that's 90 or 95% all the big names out there. And it's got their website. You can look up any one of them. And that's about it. So the book is done. Long live the book. Any questions, comments, suggestions? Anybody would like to say anything about these nets now that the book's done? Anything at all? NLA Hamsnet. Go ahead. Call now.
Not much activity.
Go ahead.
I say there's not much activity here right now.
Not much activity. Yeah, so I appreciate it very much. I've enjoyed doing these. There's a whole bunch of them on National Liberty Alliance / was it Ham Radio or back to that. NationalLibertyAlliance.org/ham, and you can listen to the entire series if you like. But I totally encourage you to talk to somebody local. It's listening to my chicken voice here isn't the greatest, and I can see why people get upset at my voice. And also, it's better to have an interaction with somebody, so contact your local ham. I really appreciated doing this, and unless somebody wants to take it over and do it some more. I think that's the end of the HampNet for now, until we see that we need some more instruction or somebody needs some more information. I appreciate everybody that's participated. There's been a lot of different people, and I thank everyone for helping make this work. Last call. Anyone?
Yeah, I would just like to add that we do have, like Terry just said, all of the recordings as we've gone through the book, and they're all up on the HAM page. It's under the COS tab. They're all there. You can go click on any one of them and listen to it if you want to go through the whole sequence and learn and study for the exam. That's a good way to get some input. And I would encourage people to, you know, if you want to, I don't know if you're a person that learns by the book, you learn by watching TV or how you learn. But if you like playing with your computer, possibly even your cell phones, you can download programs and they will train you on the Q&A and for the exams. They have, I assume, the same questions there that are in the manual. They're from the same source. And it's kind of interesting because it'll go through and it will, you can set up how often you want it to remind you that there's a section that you missed a question or two. So you can set it up so every 10th question will go back to one that you're having trouble remembering, or every 20th, or if you just breeze through it, it won't bring it up again. And it'll tell you what percentage of your questions were answered correctly the first time and that sort of thing as well. So it's very informative, gives you interaction back and forth to let you know how you're doing as you study. Now, I went through and took all three exams that way. I studied for a couple, 3 weeks on the computer and took the exams and did fine. So I went in and took the tests. I passed the first two exams the first time I tried, and then I waited a month and studied for the extra class, which is a little more difficult. More material, more questions. And then the first two, I didn't actually take the exams. I just studied. The last one, I took a bunch of exams. And when I got to where I could pass the exams, I forget, it's 37 out of 45 or 52 questions you have to answer. Then I went in and took the exam the following month. Our local HAM group here meets once a month on Tuesday nights. And so that was an easy way for me to do it. I don't do so well reading books, but I did like that interactive method. It just automatically pops up a question and gives you you answer it, and if you answer it wrong, it'll you can click and see what the answers are. You know, there's usually four answers given for any question. It's multiple choice. And if you get the wrong one, you can try again. And if you get the wrong one, you can try again until you get the right one. Or you can look and see what the answer is. So I would hardly recommend anybody that's serious about becoming a ham to study with that method if that seems to work for you or sounds good. It does cost you, I think it was $25 for the first one, maybe $30 for the second, $35 for the third. Of course, the manual costs a fair amount, too. I forget, what was that, $15 to $25 for the manual, but you just buy one. So, Terry, somehow lost her connection and cannot get in. So, unless someone would like to make some suggestions for where we might go next, we're going to temporarily stop the HAM weekly calls. If you come up with any ideas or something you'd like to try that you think people would be interested in, you can email me, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. And we'll be happy to take a look at it and see if there's something more we can do. If not, until we meet again at 9 o'clock or on the other calls. It's been nice having you on board. I've enjoyed the sequence or series, and it was interesting because I was studying and taking my exams as we went through this material. And I'd really like to thank Terry. I thought she did a tremendous job of putting this together and going through it, even though sometimes she had problems and she was driving somewhere and had to pull over to the side of the road and do an hour program or a 45-minute program. So she really put her heart and soul into it. Bless her soul. So unless someone comes up with some new ideas, this will be the end. I'm going to turn off the recording.